Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Emma.
And I'm Gabby, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I am well. I am experiencing lots of burps because I've just drunk a load of lemonade. So I just wanted to get that out now in case it happens in the next few minutes, because it might do.
Mate, bank holiday Monday, drinking the lemonade, downing it. Were you chugging it?
I was chugging it. I should say the only reason there's lemonade in the house is because I had sangria for lunch. So so I have been drinking proper juice,
right,
as well. I just that most recently I've just chugged a load of lemonade.
And, okay, well, yeah, I'm sure the listeners are really looking forward to that.
Well, I think that's what they tune in for, right?
Just your gassy sounds.
Yeah, exactly. My bodily functions. Oh, dear. Sorry, all. Yes, welcome to today's episode.
Yes. Who are we talking to today, Gabs?
Oh, well, we are talking to Erin Holland, who is an Australian superstar.
She is a superstar, isn't she?
She fucking is. She does everything.
Yeah, because we were just talking about this. We were like, oh, let's just make sure that we know like everything that she does. So we looked her up because we knew she was a singer and a TV host and had done some modelling, but it turns out she was also a sports presenter and a dancer and a charity worker, and also that she has achieved advanced qualifications in classical voice, clarinet and theory.
Wow, what a woman.
Mm-hmm. I used to play the clarinet.
Well, now she's your best friend, so.
Yeah.
Erin, when you're listening, which I'm sure you will, Emma's now your BFF.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I did not achieve advanced qualifications in clarinet.
Did you not? One of my best friends played the clarinet, and I liked her very much, but it wasn't for me.
The low notes are nice. I'm not a big fan of the high notes.
Okay.
Yeah, I got seduced by... what was it called? It was like Encarta Music or something like that.
Ah,
and they had this.
Old school.
There was a clarinet solo from Peter and the Wolf, which is really, it's the cat. It's really nice. It's really like those lovely, deep, woody notes. And I was I want to play that instrument. And then I found out that a lot of it is that like high, kind of thin, reedy sound, which is
right.
Like, so nice.
Can you include some of that into the end of this episode?
What, a bit of Peter and the Wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, probably licensed, so probably going to find that hard. But look, if any listeners want to play, who played the clarinet, want to play Peter and the Wolf, I will include it in the next episode.
Massive digression. So yes, we spoke to Erin because, as you might imagine, given that we've spoken to her, she is experiencing some fertility struggles.
Yeah, and do you know what I really loved about this conversation is it's not our usual interview, is it?
No, it's not.
Because she's the way she's kind of gone about this is very different to the rest of us.
She doesn't want a baby right now.
Yeah.
Which is unlike, you know, 99% of our interviewees. So yeah, it's interesting in that sense.
Yeah, but also she's so kind of raw about it, even though she's not necessarily like got the same kind of emotions as like those who have been trying for years and years. It's really interesting.
It is interesting. It's slightly different, but it is also she is going through grief as well. So I find it. She's very articulate about it, and I really enjoy talking to her. And she was great. So thank you, Erin.
Mm-hmm. We're also talking. Well, we'll have a little chat ourselves. If you want to skip that bit, please do.
Trigger warning.
Yeah, trigger warning. It's a continuation of our conversation last week, which was the outcome of pregnancy test. So if you want to skip it, I will make sure the time code is in the show notes. I think we're going to move it to the end of the show like we did last time.
Okay.
So that you can listen to the Erin interview and then just turn off.
And Professor Tim.
And Professor Tim, obviously. Yeah, yes.
Don't turn off poor Professor Tim. Who is going to be talking about, Emma?
He's going to be talking about what happens if you don't respond well to stims. Is there anything you can do?
So interesting. Because it's happened to a few people that we know, hasn't it? That there's just nothing has happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's got something to say about that.
He certainly does. And other news, we were at Carfest at the weekend.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, we were. Oh, yeah. Headline act on the infertility stage. Whoop, whoop.
I mean, we talked to Emma Gunns about like BFN and stuff, and she was a really good interviewer. Like, if you haven't heard her podcast, check it out. Yeah. She was just really lovely as well.
She was very lovely. It was quite nice being interviewed by her, wasn't it?
It was gentle and tender.
It was. And there was at least, I think, three people in the audience that were there to listen to us. There was one woman who was pregnant after infertility, and she shed a tear. So I think I kind of wanted to run after her and give her a hug afterwards. If she's listening, if you are the lady who is pregnant after infertility who asked us the question about that, and just know that I wanted to run after you and give you a hug, but I couldn't. it was a great experience. What I'm taking away from it is that. It was amazing to have infertility on the lineup of a fucking festival. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
it's a festival with like big bands, you know, the usual festival vibes, plus people talking about infertility. That is such an important thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't just us either, was it? Because Izzy Judd was there. We bumped into.
We did. Infertility celeb off. It was great.
Celeb off. Like we're celebs. And Russell Brown was there, and I was eminently disappointed because I've always said to myself, Emma, if there's one celebrity that you probably stand an okay chance of pulling, it's Russell Brand.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I've heard he's not that fussy, and I just feel like maybe like he'd be into the idea. And the time came, he was, and I couldn't make eye contact. I was too shy.
You were too shy. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I was quite ready to go up and say hello to him, but I just couldn't quite do it. He was wearing a straw cowboy hat. And my husband has been likened to him in the past. There used to be a website of people who look like my husband.com. And as in my husband, I won't say his name, Mr. Gabby. People who look like Mr. Gabby.com. And Russell Brand was a feature.
Russell Brand, I would say, doesn't look like him so much, has like a lot of similar mannerisms.
He's got a lot of similarities with him, yeah, in terms of his probably his styling, but not his actual facial features.
Yeah.
His styling and his mannerisms and his really annoying habit of using long words where they aren't needed.
Yeah. Does Mr. Gabby do that?
Have you not noticed?
No. No, okay, I'll look out for that. Obviously the guy from The Last Kingdom is the guy who looks the most like Mr. Gabby.
Oh, yes. If anyone's wondering, the, what's his name?
King Alfred.
King Alfred from The Last Kingdom is basically my husband's doppelganger. God, we digress again.
Right. I think that's all the announcements that we have to make. So if you would like to catch up with us or send us a message, you can do so on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
On Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
You can buy our book.
Oh, it's called Big Fat Negative. Mad. Yeah. Mad. Who would have thought? It's also very good. It's very good, guys.
It's extremely good. You can get that at in good bookshops and purveyors of books. And also, we would love it if you would give the podcast a little review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, because it helps other people to find it. And exactly. We've been getting some really nice reviews recently. And it's
thank you, everyone. That's really kind. You're all great. We love you so much. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. Well, enjoy, Erin.
Enjoy. And we will speak to you at the end of the podcast.
Yes. Erin, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so nice to speak with you ladies, finally.
You too. I've been stalking you on Instagram for too long. well, as you know, I'm sure, we start all of our podcasts with the same question, which is, tell us about your journey.
Ooh, so I guess my journey started in November last year. I've always been, you know, full gung-ho, career orientated. I've been in a relationship with my now husband for the last 8 years, but I've very much been like, nope, not ready for kids. Kids are a future Erin problem, kind of not really thinking about it. And then I did a little show called SAS Australia, which I know you guys are familiar with because we had the same bloody four big burly men thrashing us over here in Australia called SAS Who Dares Wins, I think is yours over there.
Oh my God, yes.
I know, I'm absolutely nuts. And I did that show, and part of it is they put you through these crazy physical and mental medicals to check that you're of sound mind, although you're never of sound mind if you do that show, and body to do the show. And part of it is, of course, you do blood tests, you check that your body's sort of fit and able to cope. And I just thought, hey, like, I've never done an AMH test. All of my friends sort of starting to get their heads around fertility and having children had said, look, just get it done. It's really easy. You can just ask your doctor. You're getting other bloods anyway. Just try. And I went, oh, okay. And I've always been on the pill for about 16 years at this point, since I was 16, and, you know, never really had any issues with periods. Skipped them a lot of the time because I was low iron and it's not even a proper period anyway. So, you know, kind of just not something I ever really thought about. And my AMH came back as really, really low. And I kind of wasn't surprised because I've never had a whoopsie. I'm not really great at the whole take one pill a day thing. And yeah, it kind of shocked me into going, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm 32. I don't think I'm there yet, but I don't want this part of my life to pass me by. Let's go and get some tests done with my husband, who's, by the way, desperate to be a dad. He's blessing, very, very ready. So, and November last year, we went to see a fertility specialist, and when he did the internal, he went, oh, you've got a lot of eggs. This doesn't really make sense with the AMH reading of around a 4.2 or something, I think it was, that I got given. He goes, you sort of present as someone who has the complete opposite issue. To me, this looks like PCO. And so when that test came back, I was actually a 34.4, not a 6 or 4 point something. Yeah, something really low. So it ended up that I had the complete opposite issue to what I thought I had, and I never had a period because of this polycystic ovaries, or multicystic ovaries that they call it. Luckily, I don't have the syndrome, but I have this mass amount of eggs, which has prevented me from having a period. And it wasn't until I'd, you know, done these blood tests for SAS, came off the pill after doing the show and didn't get a period for that long, that I even realized that I had an issue. And yeah, sort of since then I've been trying to freeze embryos and start the process of IVF now that, you know, my husband and I've got our heads around the process, and things have been, I guess, a lot more difficult than anticipated. So it's kind of something which wasn't intending to be what it was and ended up snowballing into, oh my gosh, like, this is actually an issue, and this actually really might take us some serious time before we're ever maybe able to fulfill it. So I kind of dip my toe into the fire and was looking to, you know, come up with a bit of a safety net for future Erin. And it ended up that the safety net kind of broke, really. And it's been hard to even get the embryos together, let alone even think about transferring them. So that's sort of the short part of it.
Where are you currently with it?
Just about to start my third egg collection cycle. Okay. and creating embryos with my hubby. So first round I ended up with absolutely nothing, which really kind of threw me into a bit of a fit of despair, which is actually where I first found you lovely ladies, because I found myself just wanting to try and educate myself, find other people going through a similar situation, actually just give thought to infertility, because it wasn't really something that I'd ever contemplated before in the past. It wasn't something that I was sort of looking, you know, I wasn't looking to fall pregnant that minute, but it's the sort of age old, the second something's taken away from you, you didn't realize how much you actually wanted it in the first place. So yeah, it was a big shock to the system to, you know, spend all the money, put your body through all of that to come up with absolutely nothing, and then not only realize that, oh, you know, it's never going to be normal for me, but it might actually really take me a long period of time to even get to a point where, you know, I might actually be able to even try to fall pregnant. So yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. The second round was more successful than the first. We got three embryos to freeze, which was great. Okay, and I'm about to start my third round, because in an ideal world, which, you know, who knows if that even exists, but hopefully two children would be amazing. So my doctor suggests I need around 7 embryos on ice to give that a go. Yeah, so not even transferring yet. Still a long way to go before that point, but just sort of trying to gung-ho get through these egg collections while I'm as young as I possibly can be.
And how is that? Like, how's your head? Where's your head at right now?
Oh, she's all over the shop. depends on the day. I think, and obviously that's a lot to do with the hormones, and because I actually don't have a cycle at all, they've discovered with all of these beautiful internal ultrasounds that I'm having every ordinary.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how desensitized you can get in a very short period of time. I'm like, whatever, mate, go for it. I'm very scrambled a lot of the time, and I have these periods of moments where I go, right, like, I think, like, this is just going to have to happen now. Like, let's get them in there. Let's go for it. And times where I go, oof, I'm not sure that I can handle this at the moment. And I think because they put me on the pill to create a cycle, because I don't naturally ever have a cycle, I'm kind of getting the hormones from coming off and on the pill, obviously getting the hormones from the stims, obviously getting the calm down from each collection as well. And, yeah, it's a lot. And then also grappling with the whole, I don't kind of feel ready, but is the universe telling me that it's kind of now or never? It's a lot. I don't really know where I sit most days.
So the plan is still to freeze the embryos, not to put any of them back in for the time being.
We're sort of thinking early next year, after we get through a few big work commitments, is probably the plan. The thing is as well, with what my husband and I do for work, is we both travel a lot, we're both overseas a lot, and finding a time that suits the schedule is almost as difficult in many ways. So in an ideal world, that would be probably when we'll start getting our heads around transferring it and seeing how we go.
Yeah. I mean, you said that you've dipped your toe into the kind of infertility community. Does the fact that you're kind of planning to freeze all at the moment, does it make you feel a little bit at odds with the rest of the community? How have you felt yourself kind of sitting within it?
I think sometimes I do definitely feel that way, because in some ways I'm expressing the fact that I feel very hurt and very confused and very worried of the fact that, you know, realistically, you know, that there's a good chance that, you know, it may never happen for me. And the fact that I went through that cycle where there was completely nothing, and you know, subsequently, even though I have a lot of eggs, I now know that quantity does not equal quality, and there's so many other factors that go into it. But I think, you know, everyone's journey is completely different, and perhaps I'll never feel ready to get my head around this. And I guess the feelings of confusion are as valid as any other part of infertility. And the fact that I have been so, I suppose, distraught and upset by the lack of my body doing what, quote unquote, it should be able to do, and sort of, I suppose, dipping my toe in, like you mentioned, and kind of putting my story out there for other people to connect with. The response that I've had shows me that people are accepting of me and where I'm at, and people are understanding of me and where I'm at, and you know, we're a much larger community than I had ever realized. So I think there's a place for everyone in every stage of this infertility journey, I suppose. And I guess I'm just very aware, thanks to lovely ladies like you and the people that, you know, I have been connecting with and listening to and reading about, you know, they're all very real possibilities for me. And I just want to educate myself and surround myself with the right people and the right education so that, you know, if or when the journey does continue and is difficult for me, I feel like I'm not alone. And I guess the response that I've had from other people shows me that they are connecting with the things that I'm talking about. Obviously, you know, even, you know, egg collection and freezing within itself is can be quite a traumatic thing. And I think going through a cycle and things, you know, coming out with nothing at the end of it has been a real lesson in itself, and something that I feel like I need to, I suppose, you know, beef up my armor and prepare myself for what potentially lies in the future, because it's such a long journey, and I guess there is so much I don't know and so much we all don't know about the process. It's hard to get your head around, and feelings of confusion, I guess, just as valid as any other feelings.
I think you're in quite a unique situation, aren't you? Because you haven't had the kind of we're trying naturally stage, right? So you haven't had the like monthly, oh, I might be pregnant. No, I'm not. Oh, I might be pregnant. Oh, I'm not. Do you feel like weirdly that's something you've missed out on?
Yeah, 100%. I think that was one of the biggest things that I grieved when I first got the news back from my doctor, in that the likelihood of me ever being able to conceive naturally was so very low, because in all the times that he checked me within when I'd stopped the pill and didn't get a period for 8 months, is there was never ever any evidence that I actually had a cycle. So the likelihood of me having an ovulation might be once or twice a year, if that. So I kind of grieved the loss of it ever being a normal process, and that upset me more than I thought it would, for someone who kind of never had really gotten their head around, you know, I suppose going through that at all. So it was a really confusing time, because for someone who didn't think that they were that maternal but knew that they wanted to be a mother in the future, to feeling that huge sense of inadequacy that my body couldn't do what my body was meant to be able to do, and in that sort of primal sense, it was really difficult. And I think that was when I sort of felt like I wanted to express those emotions too, because I surely can't be the only person who has felt that way in that moment, that they've discovered that, hey, you know, that their body wasn't able to do that. So yeah, I really did grieve that process, and you know, I was like, oh, I'll never be able to. It will never be a surprise. It will either be a relief that it worked, or the devastation that it didn't. And that was a bit of a bitter pill to swallow when I wasn't ready to kind of swallow it in the first place, I suppose. It kind of all came at me in a bit of a tidal wave when, you know, I sort of mentioned before, like I was there to sort of create my little safety net and have things, you know, all my ducks in a line for when I was ready. And all of a sudden the safety net kind of broke, and I was there going, oh, shit, like I don't even know what to think about this right now. So yeah, it's been a lot to get my head around, for sure.
I mean, you've talked about how kind of your husband's a bit more ready than you are, and he's a bit more kind of paternal, and you talked about feelings of guilt that you've had. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that? How are you feeling at the moment on that one? How's he making you feel on that one?
Yeah, oh god, bless him. he is so excited to be a dad. And that really calms me a little bit too, because for all the feelings that I have of feeling like, oh, like, am I ready? Can I do this? He's just so 100% all in there. Yeah. You know, best uncle in the world and very supportive. And, you know, to his credit, for someone who was probably ready to be a dad 5 years ago in our 8-year relationship, and it's taken me a little bit longer to get there, he's never put any pressure on me. But the second I've kind of given an inch, he's run a mile. So, like, he's the guy that when I had those tests done last year, he's there going, great, I'll find us a doctor. I asked all my friends, this guy's really good. Like, let's go and see him. I booked the appointment. Like, he's really proactive. And
that's so nice, because men are usually not the proactive ones in this process. Oh, yeah.
A 1,000,000%. So he's been very, very pro on the baby train and pro doing whatever it, you know, whatever it takes to sort of get me where I need to be, physically and mentally, which has been really wonderful. But yeah, I think when you've got a partner who is so desperate to be a dad, I kind of already felt like I was letting him down, not being there yet mentally. Mm. And then when your body physically fails you in that sense, I felt really guilty, because I was like, if you were with someone else, like, you could have had two kids by now. You could have been, you know, in your little, yeah, your happy family. And I, you know, the guilt of me going, feeling like, oh, you know, what if I can never give you this? Like, you know, God, I'm even about to cry right now while I'm talking to you guys. Mm. But it's very, really, yeah, it's, yeah, it's really hard. And
Erin, do you have a tissue nearby?
I actually don't. How dumb was that?
We should warn people. We should warn
people. I know.
No, it's always
fine.
Therapy.
Oh, 100%. And I think the biggest thing about sort of sharing this journey is it's been as much for me as it is for whoever it is that wants to listen, because it is cathartic, mm-hmm, having to sort through your feelings and your emotions and try and make my own sense of how I'm feeling. Because yeah, and you know, I always wonder in a way, was it my mind's way of alluding me to the fact that my body wasn't going to find this easy, that sort of made me go, oh, you know, maybe, you know, you'll get there eventually, or is this right for you? It's funny, it's made me sort of question the universe a little bit in a way, and I'm not a super spiritual person in my day-to-day life, but you kind of go, oh, was this the universe's way of saying this is not going to be easy for you? Or yeah, I found it really confusing.
It's so normal to feel like this. It's so normal to have the guilt. Like, I had it hideously all the way through IVF, because, you know, you, as a woman, you're supposed to be able to give your husband a child. Like, it's basically all they cared about until about 50 years ago. Hmm. And it's, you know...
Thank God we live now.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank God we've got more to give.
It's so hard when you can't do that, and the feelings of guilt are horrible.
It is. But I mean, I don't need to say this, but it's not your fault. And
no,
there's a lot of people out there in the same boat. So it's, you know, you just got to move past those feelings as much as possible. It sounds like you've got the right guy to help you do it.
Yeah, he is amazing. And then thank goodness, because it would be, as you guys very well know, it's such a lot to put your body through. And I think that's been some of the confusion for me sometimes too, is because I'm kind of going, like, I'm doing this for future Erin. Future Erin absolutely wants a family, just with the nature of my job and what I do. It's made it hard to sort of find the right time for us. Like, we're actually based in separate cities as well. So I live in Sydney in Australia, and he's based in Brisbane if he's not overseas. And as a professional cricketer, my husband's away for 6+ months of the year. So whilst I have taken a bit of time to get my head around being ready, there's also been those sort of circumstances, I guess, which, you know, all go towards probably me being in that frame of mind as much as anything else. So yeah, so you know, this whole process of going through IVF and getting our ducks in a row and having the little embryo babies ready to go for when the time was right, felt like obviously the right thing for us to do in this moment. And then, you know, when things kind of didn't work out the first round, and you realize even with a successful round, how little success you do have too. You know, you go from 20 follicles to 18 eggs to 3 embryos. I'm obviously super thrilled with 3 embryos, but you kind of go, they're really shitty odds, aren't they? and then you've got to hope that the transfers take, and they tell you that there's only a, you know, 25 to 30% chance of someone my age that they take. So you're going to need like this many for this, and kind of go, oh my gosh, like getting your head around all of this stuff is crazy. And you go, oh man, yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
I think maybe that should be like the tagline for IVF.
It's a lot.
100%. It's a lot to get your head around.
Yeah. To change the subject completely, like you've kind of shared that the hormones have kind of wreaked havoc a little bit with your skin. Obviously, your job involves a lot of photographs of you. So how is that going?
Yeah, the skin situation's been fun. As you mentioned, I do a mix of TV presenting, modeling, performing on stage as a singer, bits and pieces. So obviously what's on the outside is important, and the fact that my skin has been an absolute nightmare has been a bit of a struggle. And you know, it's cystic acne and huge welts and things like the photo I popped up on Instagram the other day. But then there's also dryness, like skin dryness, which is strange. Like, how could you have oily skin and then dry skin all at once? And yeah. I was someone who had pretty good skin my entire life. So that's been a real shock to the system. I found the DHEA that I've been on as well, because I carry a lovely neural tube defect, something else I found out with my blood tests. So I've been pumped full of folic acid, and my testosterone levels are also very low. So I've been on the DHEA, and even just with the fertility supplements and that particular testosterone supplement, I've noticed baby hair growth as well, which has been really fun.
Fucking hell. I mean, is it hard enough? Do you know what I mean?
I know. You're getting hair growing where hair's never grown before. bad skin. And yeah, so I'm kind of dealing with all of those changes in my body already. Yeah, kind of almost starts preparing in a way, doesn't it, for hopefully pregnancy one day, because, you know, your body is responding in ways that you're not used to. The mood swings. Like, Ben looks at me sideways and I just cried, and he's like, what is wrong with me? And he goes, are you okay? I'm like, no, and I don't know why. It's just, yeah, it's been a lot. And you know, as I'm sure you ladies know, it's injecting yourself because you've got to do it at a certain time each day in your car or in an airport toilet or right before you walk into an event, and then you're going, oh hi everyone, yep, no, everything's fine, no, wasn't just stabbing myself in the toilet with a couple of needles, like everything's fine, nothing to see here. It's just a lot, and I'm not a very organized person, so it's been a lot of alarms, a lot of routines, a lot of remembering to take your supplements every day, a lot of, you know, and living between two cities like I do, it's taking my sharps on the plane with me each time and answering the questions, why it goes through security, having my little note to say it's okay, I'm going through IVF, this is the reason. As we said before, it's a lot. It's a lot to get your head around. And yeah, so sort of it's been a bit of a really interesting journey, and the changes in my body already have been a little, you know, a lot to get my head around. So I guess sort of coming clean and sharing my story as well, I just sort of felt like it was a really good way to not only tell my story, which I was, you know, finding really cathartic, to actually voice the absolute mess and gibberish that was going in my brain. But it was nice to sort of have that full disclosure of, hey, I'm not really myself at the moment, and this is why. Mm-hmm. And I might look different, and I might sound different, and I might look at you and have a conversation and feel like I'm a million miles away, and this is the reason why. So, yeah, I'm sort of a person who wears their heart on their sleeve a lot anyway. So when someone kind of looks at you and says, you know, how are you? I find it really hard to lie and to say that I'm fine when I'm not. So, yeah, so I think bad skin's just one of the many fun, joyous things I've discovered.
Well, you finding, because, you know, Gabby and I were big fans of like big shapeless, like tunicky dresses. during our IVF experiences. Are you finding there's kind of bloating? Are you having to change up your wardrobe?
Oh, absolutely. I love good suit, because a good suit, oversized blazer, definitely a good, you can have it short so you get your legs out and you feel like there's some sort of shape going on, but definitely a sort of a tunic, blousey dress is a great idea, because having polycystic ovaries like I do, I'm looking at 22 plus follicles every time I stim. So as we all know, if they all blow up to be over 20 millimeters each follicle, I've got ovaries that are the size of bloody eggplants inside of there. So they're huge. Like, I look at myself like, I dead set look like I'm 3 months pregnant right now. So
I
really found I was getting very uncomfortable towards the end. And even in the week or so after, as everything kind of calms down, I was finding that I was noticeably a lot more bloated. So comfort was absolutely key, and sort of walking around with a heat pack strapped to my body at all times of the day was kind of a necessity. So, and it wasn't about hiding anything. Like I said, I've been quite open with what I've been going through, but just the comfortability, you feel really gross. As soon as you start taking that second injection, I reckon that's when shit gets real and you start feeling foul.
I mean, this might be a hard question to answer, but I think, you know, if you look at Instagram, particularly before you came out on the fertility front, your life looks absolutely perfect. Do you think it's kind of good to be able to show that behind the camera sometimes things aren't always absolutely perfect?
I don't think anybody has a perfect life, and I've definitely been, I suppose, guilty of only showing the shiny parts, just because, you know, and for most parts of my life I've been incredibly lucky and incredibly privileged. And, you know, I live in a lovely country. I live in Australia. I've had a great, you know, great upbringing, great parents, and I kind of didn't really feel like I had too many ugly bits to show, which is, such a blessing, to be perfectly honest. And I didn't feel like any of the parts that maybe weren't so shiny, I had enough to share. I think we're all very guilty on Instagram of showing that curated, shiny, beautiful side of our lives sometimes, because it's just easier that way. It's not easy to show warts and all, I think, because you open yourself to criticism and to comment. And the parts of my life that weren't so shiny, I guess I didn't feel like I had enough to contribute and to, I suppose, back up why I was feeling that way, if that makes sense. But with this infertility journey, I really felt like you guys were probably one of the only resources that I found and enjoyed listening to that kind of took me on the journey from the beginning. So I kind of got pregnant with you as I was listening to things and went through IVF with you, and I really appreciated that insight. So when it became apparent that my journey was perhaps going to be something similar, I thought, well, all I'm doing is looking for resources of people who are going through what I'm going through in real time. And I found that in you. And I thought, if I can be that to someone else, then, like, fuck it, be that person, like, bear it all. And selfishly, it does help me too. Like I've already said, it does help me to voice how I'm feeling. So you know, it's real life. I'm trying to be a more authentic version of myself online because not only does it help me, but it seems to help others. So I think I think it's a really good thing. And the more we normalize this, and the number of people who I knew of, but many, many, many more that I didn't know of in my life, who I thought I was close with, who I've actually found out have gone through this, is astronomical. And the number of people that reach out sort of silently and say, hey, look, me too, I'm going through it, then great. You know, everyone deals with things in their own way, and everyone is more than entitled to go through this process in whatever way they see fit. But if someone like me can deal with it, with being open, and it helps people, then, you know, I'm more than happy to be that person. So,
yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It just helped. Like, it's definitely the last few series of this have definitely been us kind of motivated by helping people through. But the first series was definitely us just trying to, like, figure out what was going on in our heads, I think, in a big way, right, Gabs?
Yeah, absolutely. It was like counselling.
Yeah. Just a good rant. Good old
It's
rant.
A therapy session. Yeah. It just helps you just to get it out. Okay, so Erin, thank you so much for being so generous and so open with us and with your experiences. But just before we end, I just wanted to kind of ask, what is next for you? Like, when's your next egg collection? What is going to happen after that?
So, well, first of all, thank you for listening to that absolute rabble that has come out of my out of my brain. And I think the number one thing I've taken away from this is, you know, it is such a learning process and it is such a journey, and mine's just starting a little bit earlier than some other people who are a little bit more fortunate to have, you know, bodies that are working in that way. But, you know, mm-hmm. I think in some ways this journey is actually helping me get to the place where I need to be at to get my head around motherhood and I guess to appreciate just how truly special and what a miracle each tiny little bubba is. And I feel like I've educated many of my friends who've had many children very successfully with about how things actually work in their own bodies. Yeah. They go, oh, is that what happens? I'm like, yeah, mate, I can tell you exactly how it is that little guy came to be. But no, I appreciate you having me on and listening to the ramble. But, you know, for me, I'm just about to start my third egg collection in the hope of getting enough embryos to maybe have my own little family of two one day. So I'm back on the pill, the joys. I'll be going to see my doctor next week. I should have seen him last week, but COVID prevented that appointment. Oh, the poor guy finally got struck down. So I'll be seeing my doctor next week. We'll do a beautiful little internal ultrasound, check that I've healed up okay from my last egg collection, and hopefully take me off that pill, encourage that cycle to start, and then we'll start stems again from there. So yeah, onto my third egg collection and really praying that it's my last one, but you know, knowing very well that it may not be, and just preparing myself for whatever comes. Yeah, we roll on, we continue.
We're rooting for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that. And thank you so much for everything that you guys do. You're truly wonderful. And you've really helped me the last 8 or 9 months or so. So thank you.
We've loved hearing from you. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now it's time for IVF.
What the F?
What the F? Right, so we are talking about what happens if your body doesn't respond that well to stims.
It's one of those things that, like, you give your body over to science when you do IVF, and you just expect that the drugs that you're putting into your body are going to have the desired effect. And, you know, we've heard many times now where it hasn't, and it is very confusing.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because I always think in this situation about, do you remember in the first series we interviewed Katia?
Yeah.
And we talked about, they ended up going to Greece, and I reckon we still get an email a week from somebody asking for contact details of the clinic in Greece.
Yeah, we do.
Because she didn't respond very well at all, and then went over to Greece, and then I think I can't remember what they did differently, but I guess Professor Tim can tell you a little bit more.
Absolutely, he can. Let's hand over to Prof T.
So before having IVF, the most important test really from an IVF perspective is to check the woman's ovarian reserve. And we measure the ovarian reserve nowadays really by doing an AMH or anti-Müllerian hormone blood test. You can also do an antral follicle count scan to look at the number of resting follicles in the ovaries. And the traditional test is a FSH or follicle stimulating hormone blood test, although that's not particularly useful. So AMH is the main one. So what we then do is we look at the AMH level, and the higher the AMH result, the higher the woman's ovarian reserve, i.e. the higher the number of eggs in the ovaries. And what you do is you therefore reduce the stimulation dose, so you try and avoid overstimulation and too many follicles or eggs being produced. In women with a very low ovarian reserve, so low AMH or low antral follicle count on scan, you therefore give a higher dose of stimulation. The problem is that there comes a point where you can give more and more stimulation, and the ovaries will just give what they can give. And if there's a very low ovarian reserve, you may just get a very low number of follicles and therefore eggs being developed. And there may not be a lot that can be done about that. So if you do have no or little response to stims, the main thing to check is, well, what is your ovarian reserve? And if it's low, was the dose of your stimulation adjusted appropriately? People have also looked at whether supplements such as DHEA may help the ovarian response in women with a low ovarian reserve. And I think the jury's out on that one. The studies are very poor quality, and I honestly don't know whether DHEA helps or not. I've sort of seen it both ways when it has been used in my patients. I think if you are overweight and you have a low ovarian response, then normalising weight can also help.
Hello. Just to warn you once again, if you do not want to hear about the outcome of a pregnancy test, now is the time to turn off the podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, guys, we're about to hear from Emma and the results. And yeah, if you want to listen, do. If you feel like you can't, please switch off, and we'll see you next week. Okay, Emma, the TWW is over?
Yeah, it's over.
Okay. All right, how do we want to tackle this?
Well, I'm just going to go out and say it. So anybody that doesn't want to listen to the results of a pregnancy test after IVF, please, please, please turn off now. Like, I honestly, if you think it's going to be better for your mental health, just turn off. Fine.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of skip forward, I would say, 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
And then you'll get to the Erin Holland interview, which is really interesting. And she's so sweet and nice.
She is lovely. She's really lovely.
And also we'll put the exact time code in the show notes. So if you're not sure, go to the show notes.
Yes, exactly.
But yes.
And so, yes, stop listening now.
Now. Okay.
Okay, mate.
So,
what happened?
So in short, I had another positive pregnancy test. And I really think maybe we should just start selling BFN to people. Like, we've never had a negative pregnancy test on this show, which is insane.
It is a bit strange, isn't it?
It's interesting because the last time we did a 2-week wait episode, we did Sophie's one, and somebody messaged us afterwards saying, I really wish you'd stop doing these. And I like empathize, you know, we had said don't listen, but I empathize with her because sometimes you just want to hear somebody get a negative result, you know. You want to hear somebody who's in the same place as you. But I also think with most of the ones that we've done, what they haven't, you know, what doesn't necessarily come across while we're recording is all the heartache and hideousness that goes into it. So, you know, we had Liz who'd been trying for, I think, was it 4 or 5 years, who'd had heartbreak after heartbreak, who'd lost embryos, who had only made it to transfer stage once, who'd had like so many cancer rounds. My last time I'd had 3 cancer rounds before I made it to transfer stage. And we of course hadn't recorded my first transfer, right?
Which was
negative.
Yeah.
Sophie had been trying for 3 years before she got to the point where she could do IVF. So, you know, I think what you don't hear here is the heartbreak, and that makes it
sometimes very difficult to listen to.
Well, you do hear it in the build-up, but you don't hear it in that episode, the reveal episode. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
If you've been following along, you will have heard the struggle. But yeah. I suppose if you're tuning in directly to the 2 week wait episode reveal and it's positive, then yeah, you're kind of missing the context a little bit.
Yeah. But even, you know, even when we did my last 2 week wait episode, you know, we only started recording BFN in August and I had my positive in November, but I'd just been through 4 years of trying for a baby. So, you know, I'd had a year between transfers with rounds getting cancelled and cancelled and cancelled. So I think we didn't quite get the kind of heartbreak and the difficulty of it. So with this one, I actually took my test early because last week we talked about the kind of the random pain and cramps that I'd been having and the fact that I'd had a day of like being sick and having a temperature and stuff. Mm. The pain just kind of didn't really subside. So on the Wednesday, I was due to take a test actually on the Sunday, but on the Wednesday, you know, I've been on Instagram for long enough to know that by day 8 after a 5-day transfer, day 7 after a 5-day transfer, you're fairly likely to get a decent line if you are pregnant. Mm. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to take a test. And if it's negative, I can come off these drugs.
Mm.
So I took my test and it was positive, and that was obviously wonderful, but I was just in so much pain. Like I couldn't really sit up properly. I couldn't walk around properly. Mm. It was just awful. It was excruciating. And the next morning I woke up and I was like, there's definitely like something's not right here. Like this shouldn't be happening. Like this isn't just normal, like post-transfer pains. So I phoned my mum.
Obviously. I mean, yeah. Who else is going to call?
Yeah. And cried a lot. And she was like, right, that's it. I'm going to get you an appointment. And so basically I knew that there was something going on. It was all the pain was on my left side. I knew there was something going on with my left ovary. I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that if I went to A&E, like our local A&E has notorious long waiting lines, I would spend 12 hours waiting. Yeah. Only to be told, oh, sorry, it hurts. Yeah. And then possibly referred for a scan in like 2 weeks' time. Which, like, I was like, I think there's something seriously wrong and I don't really want to have to wait that long for a scan. So I was like, I kind of want to, you know, skip, go and collect $200 or give away $200. So we looked I asked my consultant at the clinic if she could recommend somewhere in Kent. Was someone in Kent to see, and I found someone who's like an hour and a half drive from here. Mm. Basically a private doctor who had access to an ultrasound machine. I went in like last thing on a Friday because it's the only time. Basically, my mum had rung her secretary and begged her until she could find a time to squeeze me in, which was last thing on a Friday. And it was amazing actually to go into a surgery and to kind of describe the pain to her and to just have her listen to me and take it really seriously. And I said, you know, I know a bit about this stuff. I didn't say I've written a book, but I said, I'm a journalist. I write about this stuff quite a lot. I think what was happening here is that I've got a burst endometrioma, which is a cyst, or there's ovarian torsion, which is when your ovaries get twisted.
Yeah.
And she was like, right, here are the things that will happen if those things are happening. And I was like, yeah, I mean, sounds about right. So she scanned me, and this cyst that was when I went in for my original kind of baseline scan in May, or original kind of consultation, was 5 centimetres. And it had grown to like almost 9 centimetres across. Jesus. That's like fist sized, essentially.
Yeah.
And has burst, and that's funny enough why I'm in an excruciating amount of pain and incredibly bloated. It's because I've just got like an extra little fist in my abdomen. Insane.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
At any point was your clinic willing to scan you? Why is that not falling within their remit?
A really good question that I will answer, and that's my clinic was willing to scan me. In fact, my consultant responded really well to my email saying, is this amount of pain normal? She said, you should come in. I will scan you first thing tomorrow morning. Then I realised there was a fucking train strike on. I couldn't get up there.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which is why I tried to find somewhere in Kent I could drive to. Yeah. That actually, my mum ended up driving me to because
your mum's a hero.
Because my mum's a hero. And also, I wasn't completely sure that I was able to drive with all that
pain. It doesn't sound like a good time to drive.
No. Yeah.
And so what is the impact of this cyst going to be?
So what the doctor reckons has happened is that as soon as it burst, my stomach or my like guts basically did this thing where they just inflamed themselves to kind of contain the yick and prevent it spreading around my abdomen.
Uh-huh.
That's gross, isn't it?
It's lovely, yeah.
And that's probably why I was being sick and had a temperature, was because it was essentially an infection, like inflammation. Mm. And so she thinks that it's kind of contained it and that I shouldn't, like nothing bad will probably happen. And that it, although it does have, it can be a bit risky for a pregnancy. So she said normally she would recommend surgery, laparoscopy to kind of get rid of it. But now I'm pregnant, that's not a very good idea. It can be quite harmful and risky, more risky than if we just left it. So she just gave me the really good shit and prescribed shitloads of codeine.
Right, okay.
Which I am treating with caution because it's very addictive.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, but
it makes you constipated as well, doesn't it?
Makes you constipated, which you don't want.
No, you don't.
No.
I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah. So that's where we are. Like, all this stuff. It's been hard because I haven't felt the kind of overwhelming joy that I had with last time, because the pain has been so severe that I've been like, you know, part of me has been like, shit, I have to go through 9 months of this. Like, when will it go? And no one's able to say like, oh yeah, your body will reabsorb it.
Mm.
No one said that.
No, it's horrible that it's happened, because it has kind of robbed you of that moment of, as you say, kind of unbridled joy that you deserve, because this is a special moment for you. It's a big, exciting and special moment. And it's just really sad that you've got to deal with this.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, as somebody said to me last time when I was feeling so anxious and terrified about all this stuff, like, I'm not feeling any of that terror. I'm not feeling anxious. The pain is replacing any of that, all of that. Which in a way is a good thing, I reckon. Like, you know, it just fucking hurts. Like, but I'm not like feeling anxious or, you know, any of the stuff that I felt last time. And last time I remember saying to the doctor, like, how do I deal with this anxiety? Like, I'm really worried that I'm going to pass on to the baby. And the doctor just said, look, nature has given us 9 months to bond with this thing that's growing inside you. So I just feel like for now I can just kind of focus on myself and the pain that I'm kind of experiencing, and then I'll have plenty of time hopefully to bond with it. So I feel like, again, this time around is so different. It's so much more, I feel so much more relaxed. It helps that I'm not like bleeding loads.
Oh yeah, I mean, that doesn't help.
Yeah, we're into almost week 5 of this pregnancy and not a spot of blood has been seen.
Wow, Jesus.
Yeah, including any implantation bleeding? None.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel I'm beginning to, as the pain is kind of beginning to subside a little bit, it's giving me space to feel joy and excitement. And this time around, I'm allowing myself to do things like, if I see a name I'm like, oh, I could choose that one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas last time I was like, no, I'm not allowed to think about anything. I will jinx it.
Yeah. So you might actually plan a bit and buy things and stuff.
Yeah, I was in the baby aisle of a supermarket the other day while I was waiting for them to put together my massive pack of codeine, like enormous bag of codeine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with a friend and she was kind of buying stuff for her baby. And I was like, oh, look at that. That's cute. And then I was like, oh, like thinking, oh, I can, you know, start thinking about this stuff again. I obviously didn't buy anything. I'm not that mental. But We're on week five, mate. But yeah, and then the consultant emailed me today and was like, oh yeah, we need to do a scan. And then she gave me a date, which is 3 weeks in the future. And I was like, oh fuck, that's ages. So I do have some of the same kind of the three-week wait after the 2 week wait is awful.
Notoriously, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm in that now, which is very scary.
Mm. Well,
I wonder if I won't bond with it as much as I would have, as I did with, you know, with last time.
I don't know. I think, as you've just said, though, I think you're in a different space right now.
Mm.
And I think it'll naturally happen. Like, I think it's really hard to bond with a concept.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, once you start getting all the feelings and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure it will come.
Yeah. It's just, it's a very different place to be. And I'm, you know, I could do without like the agonizing, excruciating pain constantly. Yeah.
I mean, That would be good, right?
Yeah, that would be nice. But you know, obviously very lucky. And also, like, I feel like this is how people envisage IVF. Like, that you just do the IVF and the IVF works.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't expect that.
I know. Well, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Especially after talking to Emma Barnett, and you're like, this isn't guaranteed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you are very lucky, and it is wonderful news.
It is wonderful news, yeah. So then the next, you know, obviously we've got 4 weeks left of this series. We'll probably discuss it a bit, right?
Mm.
And then after that, no more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So that's probably 4 weeks left. That's probably enough to give us the outcome of the three week wait.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
So I'll get discharged from the clinic and discharged from BFN. Hopefully
dismissed.
Dismissed. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. Good.
Fingers crossed. I mean, that was so presumptuous of me. Listen to me presuming things.
I know.
Being so confident.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Have you learnt nothing?
Oh no, clearly not.
Well, it's great news, and I'm sure our listeners who have not switched off because they aren't in the right place are all delighted for you. So yeah, you know, I'm sure.
Thanks, mate. How was your week?
Yes, please. Yeah. Anticlimax. My week was fine. It was funny. I guess I knew you were doing what you were doing, and I've just been kind of like, because I'm on the fence and leaning towards not doing any more IVF. I'm kind of like, I was like, I wonder what will happen to me mentally
if
Emma gets pregnant again. And so yeah, it's been good. I've been like, there was a moment where obviously when you told me, and I was like really excited, and then I was like, oh, I'd like that excitement for us. Would that be nice? But then I've kind of come back to all the reasons why I'm probably not going to do it again.
Yeah.
So I think I'm all right. I'm good. I'm kind of really happy that you're where you are, and I'm happy that I can be Auntie Gabby again.
Yeah.
And I think I'm probably at peace.
Oh, mate, I'm happy that you're happy.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I mean, obviously, next week I might change my mind.
Well, you know, these things happen. And we've got at least one more series of BFN to record.
Yes, never say never, right? I just think at the moment I'm like, okay, this is good. I feel fine. I don't feel weird about it. Uh-huh. I feel excited for you. Not sad for myself. So I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, probably the excruciating pain hasn't like been super encouraging.
I'm not entirely jealous of the fist in your belly and the pain and the codeine and the puking.
Yeah, the puking wasn't probably the high point.
Yes.
Not even pregnancy puking. Fist puking.
You probably helped me. Your troubles have helped me.
Shall I tell you something funny?
Yeah, go on.
About, I'm going to say like 2 months ago, I've made two purchases. One was a TENS machine that's designed specifically for period pains.
Okay, yeah.
The other was a special new hangover pill that has been invented called Miracle.
So two things that you don't need.
Yeah, and I've used neither of them. Well, the hangover pill only arrived like 2 days ago, and I was like,
I'll take that. Guys. I'll take that off your hand.
Yeah, 30 quid, please. It's really fucking expensive.
30 quid? What is in this pill?
For a lot of pills. It's supposed to be really good. The Telegraph gave it a really good review.
So what? Sorry, you're going to have to talk me through this.
I don't know.
This is in my wheelhouse. So
I don't know the science, mate. But I would be interested in you trying out.
It's just a pill that takes your hangover away.
Yeah.
The next day or before?
Yeah. No, the next day. So you take it before you go drinking.
Before you go drinking, okay.
Yeah. And it's supposed to, like, you don't have a hangover the next day.
Does it also stop you from having a good time?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think you get as drunk.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's probably a good thing. I don't get drunk, so.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, maybe we'll do that. That'll be my experiment of the series.
Yeah. I'll give one to you next. In fact, I'll tell you what. I'll bring one for you and Mr. Gabby on Carfest Day.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, great idea. You know Mr. Gabby's going to Carnival the day after Carfest.
No, he's going to need two.
Yeah, he's going to need two. Amazing. Well, sounds good. Can you not use the TENS machine? Has it not got a dual use? Because obviously TENS machines are famous
for giving birth. I don't know. I'll have to Google it. To be honest, there was one period. I had one period between getting it and this situation, and I was too scared to use it.
Oh, did you use a TENS machine when you gave birth last time?
No.
Okay.
I used an epidural.
Epidural machine. Nice.
It was notoriously effective.
It wasn't an option for me. So.
Yeah.
anyway, all right, guys. Well. I hope that news isn't upsetting in any way and you can kind of share in our excitement for Emma.
Thanks, Ariel.
Yeah, and we promise we won't talk about it too much anymore.
No. All right.
Bye. Okay, well, that's it, isn't it? We're done.
That is it. We are finished. Today's episode is done. I hope you're all well after that. And sending loads of love.
Yeah. So next week we're talking to Natalie Sutherland and Sumaya Wazani, which was fun, wasn't it?
It was fun. They were talking about infertility in the city, in the big city, making lots of money in the big city.
He is dealing with high power jobs, isn't it? Because I think, you know, I definitely, when I was in my last job, found it really difficult because I was kind of in the city. And it is just, you've got that added pressure. I don't know. Maybe
it's a very masculine environment. It's a very masculine environment.
Yeah, but, exactly.
And it feels like when you're doing well in that environment, you feel like you can't show any vulnerability as a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when this whole thing starts to kind of, you know, become.
Yeah. So Natalie and Sumaya are both, well, Natalie's a current lawyer, Sumaya's an ex-lawyer, now recruiter. Natalie became she kind of hit the headlines earlier this year when she was made the world's, well, we think it's the world's first fertility officer at her company.
Yeah.
So she's going to talk about that a little bit. And also her story is just,
it's a tough one.
Yeah, I've heard it twice now and both times I was like, oh, God. So it was a really good one. So join us again.
Bye.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.